This is the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast brought to you by Art Wiederman, CPA with Ide Bailey. Whether it's taxes and investing or planning wisely, Art is the expert to make your dental practice profitable. At Ide Bailey, what inspires you inspires us. We provide a suite of accounting and advisory services dedicated to the total care of your practice. Visit our website to access our tools and resources tailored for dentists, idebailey.com/dentist. That's idebailey.com/dentist. This podcast is distributed with the understanding that Art Wiederman, CPA, and Ide Bailey, LLP are not rendering legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Listeners should consult with their business advisors before acting on any of the information or opinions shared. If you have questions and or feedback, make sure to email Art over at awiederman@idebailey.com. That's A-W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N at E-I-D-E-B-A-I-L-L-Y.com. You can also give Art a call at 657-279-3243. Without further delay, here's your host, Dental CPA Art Wiederman.
And hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast with Art Wiederman, CPA. I'm your host, Art Wiederman. Welcome to my podcast. We have just gone over 200 podcasts in the last month or so, and I'm bound and determined to make podcasts number 201 through 300 really outstanding content for all of you to help you. I got a wonderful email from a wonderful listener in the Midwest who they said to me that they've listened to every one of my podcasts. And I said, wow, you guys, maybe you need to get some hobbies or something. I'm not sure. But today I have a really special treat with you for you. As I've mentioned to you over the years, over the 40 years I've been a dental CPA, I've met lots of incredible dental coaches and consultants. And one of the things that I have learned in my life is that people who have a positive attitude about things, they just tend to be happier people in life. They have better practices, happier teams. And my guest today is Dr. Martin Mendelson, who is the president of Metamorphosis Coaching. He's out of Phoenix, Arizona. I met Dr. Mendelson when I was actually competing against him at the Speaking and Consulting Network Spotlight on Speaking Competition. We all had 8 minutes to present our subject. My subject was my journey as a dental CPA. Dr. Mendelson's topic was called Dental Dualism and How the Practice of Optimism Can Affect Your Brain's Ability to See, Process, and Assimilate Information. And I will tell you, Dr. Mendelson won the competition. He was the Spotlight on Speaking champion. He was an incredibly deserving champion because his 8-minute talk was absolutely scintillating. And after I heard it and I had a chance to chat with him a little bit after the competition, I said, you got to be on my podcast because I want people to hear what you have to say. And did you know, folks, that according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, negativity causes businesses to lose over $3 billion a year in revenues? That's billion with a B. So Dr. Mendelson is going to chat with us about why we have negative thoughts and connecting with the me inside of you. So if things are not going the way you want or you're having negative thoughts, I'm not going to guarantee you that you're going to get rid of them by the end of this podcast, but you will certainly understand them and understand why you have them. So we'll get to Dr. Mendelson in a moment. I want to thank my wonderful sponsor, Decisions in Dentistry Magazine, www.decisionsindentistry.com. 140 amazing continuing education courses for a very reasonable price. And on top of that, you can purchase one of three video courses that I produced, very proud of them, on metrics of a dental practice and financial planning and retirement planning and retirement plans. Also, go to www.decisionsindentistry.com. I am starting to get very involved, and I think I might have mentioned in a prior podcast and will continue to mention that I'm very excited that later this year we are going to start a series on financial planning with Justin Pelletero of our Eide Bailly Wealth team, who I've started working with. And my objective in this podcast, as you will hear today, is to deal with people who are smarter than I. So Justin and I are going to do some financial planning podcasts on what is a financial plan, what are the different aspects of it, what are some special planning techniques we use for dentists. So please look for that in the future. And if you are not getting the service you need from your CPA, Eide Bailly's got your back. We work with close to 1,000 dentists in all of our offices. And give me a call at 657-279-3243 or aweiderman@eidebailly.com. That's W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N. And if you are looking to do some financial planning, you're not really sure where you are, where you're going, you think you're ready to retire, but you're not sure, we've got your back. I am so proud of the financial planning process that our firm puts clients through. I would love to have a conversation with you about it. So before we get started with today's show and our incredible guest, I want to share with you information about the HR for Health DSO Leadership Summit. I've known Ali Aramshian for well over 20 years, and he is iconic in the dental space. And Ali started several years ago a DSO Leadership Summit. Now, you guys have heard me talk about the DSO space on this program. We've had leaders in the area. We've had attorneys. We've had DSO brokers. We've had different groups because it is real. It is out there. And what I want to do is to provide you information so that if you are either looking at selling your practice to a DSO, or if you are a current DSO and you have multiple locations and you're looking to scale, we've got the people on this podcast and the resources to help you do that. So Eide Bailly is going to be participating in Ali Aramshian and HR for Health's DSO Leadership Summit 2024. That is going to be Thursday, September 26th through Saturday, September 28th at the beautiful Atlanta, Georgia Marriott Marquis Hotel. And you can sign up for this summit at dsosummit.com. That's dsosummit.com. And Eide Bailly is going to be there, and we're going to have a couple of great presenters. First, we're going to have Doug Cash. Now, Doug Cash is a retired law enforcement officer specializing in fighting white-collar crime. And now the good news is that he's on our team as a senior manager, and he is going to be presenting a program called Embezzlement, the Hidden Threat, Understanding and Mitigating Embezzlement Risks in Dentistry. As you guys know, one out of every three to every four, depending on what you read, healthcare practitioners will be embezzled during their lifetime. And Doug is an off-the-charts expert in this area. We're also going to have Frank Donati. Now, if you remember in our conversations, if you listen to the podcast regularly, we talk about quality of earnings and EBITDA. So every time, if you are looking at selling your practice to a DSO, or if a DSO is looking at valuing their practice, they are going to do an EBITDA calculation. Now, EBITDA calculations can be misunderstood, misconstrued, miscalculated, miss everything. Well, Frank Donati, who is a partner in our Denver office, is an expert in quality of earnings. He's worked on many, many healthcare and specifically dental practices to calculate their Q of E. And he is going to be talking at this seminar, at this summit about this. And there are going to be tons of other great, great lectures and speeches and opportunities to talk to people and learn more and get more information. This podcast is one place for you to get information. So let me give it to you again. It's the HR for Health DSO Leadership Summit. Eide Bailly will have a booth there, and we'll be there. We'll be there to talk to you. It's at the it's in Atlanta, Georgia, at the Marriott Marquis Hotel, September 26th through the 28th. There are going to be tons of vendors, tons of people in the industry, and great learning experiences. So if you are not signed up and this is something that is in your wheelhouse and you want to take a couple of days and get some really good information about making good decisions or scaling your DSO practice, I would suggest you go to DSOsummit.com.
Be sure to check out our new Eide Bailly podcast, Ebb and Flow, a business podcast providing inspired insight on issues and trends the middle market faces. Hear unique business stories, get answers to frequently asked and unasked questions, and understand business topics that matter to you. Available now on your favorite podcast platform.
Okay, with that said, let me introduce my friend, Dr. Martin Mendelson. Again, he is the president, CEO of Metamorphosis Coaching out of Phoenix, Arizona. Dr. Mendelson helps dentists feel less burdened by leadership. He's empowered to resolve challenges before they grow out of control. Dr. Martin Mendelson, welcome to the Art of Dental Finance and Management.
Well, thank you so very much. It's a pleasure to be here. Can't wait to get into it today.
Well, me too. And but first, you had mentioned to me that your father had a very interesting background. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I think we got to this subject because we were talking about the idea of living a life in curiosity versus judgment and how beneficial it can be to live in a curious place. In other words, you're driving in traffic and someone cuts you off, and instead of yelling at them and saying, "That jerk, they can't drive," maybe they didn't see you. Both things are just as valuable. And so it kind of came around to how I was raised by both my parents, primarily my dad, in terms of this context where he's an engineer. My dad's still with us, so is my mom. They're 95 and 93, respectively. And my dad was one of the first, or was one of the principal engineers on the first nuclear submarine. He then was president of engineering at one of the largest jet engine manufacturing companies in the world. And everything in my childhood was a teachable moment. Yeah. And I mean everything. Well, why do you think that is? Or do you know who invented that? Or why would you say that? And so as a child and a young adult, it would really bother me because I felt like, to use a phrase, I could never relax. But now looking back, I realize he was not only teaching me about curiosity of the world from an intellectual perspective. Now, having studied happiness and holding a certification in happiness studies, now I understand that curiosity can actually drive happiness and contentment in our lives. Kind of a fascinating roundabout way that we got there.
I mean, with everything going on in the world today, there's still so many cool things that this world can bring you that if you just go and investigate it, that you can learn about, right?
Oh, 100%. And in fact, there's research on this as well. I wrote an article for Dental Economics. It was a featured cover article, January of 2024, this year, and talks about Dr. Barbara Fredrickson's broadening build theory, which basically states that positive thought action repertoires actually allow you to have a broadening effect, quote unquote, to help you see opportunities when you're in a neutral or positively charged state versus a negative one. The easiest way to couch this is think about a time where you were in a situation where you were aggravated and you come out of that situation, maybe it was a conversation, and you think to yourself, why didn't I think of that? Why didn't I see that? Why didn't that occur to me? Bingo. Right. That's exactly what we're talking about. When we're negatively charged, the blinders literally come on, figuratively and literally.
It's like me as a golfer. When I get really frustrated and mad, do I play better? No, I play worse, right?
Exactly.
I wish I would have known you 40 years ago when I picked up a golf club, and it would have been a lot less stressful. Well, tell us about your professional journey. I know that you were a practicing dentist. So tell us a little bit about your journey and how you got to from dentistry to teaching people how to be more positive.
Yeah, it's kind of an odd thing when you just kind of tell us factually, no, isn't it? It's like, how did that happen? The truth of the matter is I wanted to be a dentist from the age of 16. It happened on a lark. My cousin Barry called me up one day. He was in medical school at the time, and he was in the first year of medical school. And they were studying with the dental students. And he called me up. He said, "You ever think of dental school?" Well, I hadn't. But long story short, a friend of mine overheard a conversation I was having with my high school advisor, and I got a job at her uncle's dental practice. So I was that weird kid in high school and college, like Hermie from Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, like, I want to be a dentist. And so off I went to dental school with that goal in mind. And that's what I thought I was going to do with the rest of my life, for work in private practice. Well, about 10 years in, my hands started to bother me. And without going through all the details, I was actually out of work for 17 months. I had carpal tunnel surgery and cubital tunnel surgery on my elbow, which were actually misdiagnoses. And I was just in a lot of intractable pain. And so after 17 months, I was lucky through networking and a dental school professor friend, I ended up getting a job at a dental laboratory. And I was the liaison between the dentist and the lab for several years. From there, I went on to VITA in North America, the Shake Guide people. And I ran education and key opinion leader interactions across North America for about 5 years with VITA. And then I joined Spear Education in July of 2011 and was with them full-time for about 11 years, still associated with them as a member of the resident faculty. And during my tenure at Spear, I helped to grow our study club network. And they wanted me almost 10 years ago now to think about how we can make our study club leaders better, increase member engagement within the clubs. And lo and behold, that started me down a journey of coaching. I saw a TED Talk video by a man named Sean Accor, who wrote The Happiness Advantage. And that one video kind of changed my life. I was in a very dark place. I had imposter syndrome screaming at me from every corner of my brain, living in the hallowed halls of Spear Education, being the MC of our seminars, interacting with Dr. Spear and Dr. Kinzer, and I felt less than. And so I made a life decision that I needed to stop drinking in May of 2015. Literally that same month, I saw that TED Talk video, and that started me down the road of coaching. I got my first certification in executive coaching. That led to team facilitation, team coaching, emotional intelligence, happiness study, which now is an accredited master's. And I've taken all of my hardships, all of my trauma, all of my experiences, and I've applied it not just to dentistry, but to teams, because as my good buddy, Dr. Kyle Stanley says, dentistry is what we do, it's not who we are.
Right.
And so many dentists feel so connected to their identities. And I'm one of the people in the profession where my identity, the two sides of who I thought I was, were physically and literally ripped apart. And I had to figure out who I was as a person, not just as a label as dentist or faculty member. And so it's a journey, not, I guess you could say it's a journey, not an event, if you will.
I guess, you know, I've always been of the opinion, Dr. Mendelsohn, that people who are not in a place they want to be, they need to have an aha moment, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, your aha moment, it sounds like, came in 2015, right? When you decided that you were not, you felt like I'm assuming imposter syndrome, and you know a lot more about this than I ever will, but I'm assuming you woke up one day and said, something's not right here, I got to change it. And you made a lifestyle change, which I think is the best lifestyle change you could have made. And obviously, you turned it into a career that is, from what I know, a raving success. And I mean, I had my aha moment when my doctor told me my A1C was 7.6 and I was pre-diabetic. And I said, nope, how do we fix this? Mm-hmm. And I lost 30 pounds, started eating much better than I was. And I mean, so everybody's got to have an aha moment. I'm hoping that some of the things we talk about today will generate an aha moment in listeners who maybe don't have their practices or their teams the way they want it to be. So let's start the discussion with the fact about the success or failure of any organization, as you and I both know, and how you and what you teach is all about their people. How do you connect with the quote me's in your organization? Let's start with that.
Yeah. Yeah. So you just hit on one of my favorite catchphrases that I typically say, which is there is no I in team, but there is me. And right. All the me's in the organization are the ones that actually will foster or hinder success or lack thereof. And the truth of the matter is that regardless of your level of education, your life experience, your background, two things. People do the best they can with the skills they have at the time. And I firmly believe in my soul, with very rare exception, that no one puts the keys in their car or logs onto their computer at the beginning of the day firmly committed to driving everybody around them crazy. I just don't believe that people make
that. Now, I beg to differ, because there are several people whose names pop up in my head who I think that's what they've been put on the earth to do. But maybe you're right. Go ahead.
The vast majority of people don't.
Of course not.
What I really do is I connect with people on a deeper level, on a mindset level. And we go through discussions and even video exercises and participatory exercises to get people to understand that what they are interpreting as fact may not necessarily be the case. This is all going back to curiosity.
Sure.
And that our thoughts drive emotions, our emotions drive actions, and our actions manifest our ultimate results. It's one of my frameworks. It's an acronym of the word team. Our thoughts drive our emotions, that drive our actions, that manifest our results. And this is, you know, the acronym word is somewhat unique to my work, but the concept is not unique to me whatsoever. It really comes from cognitive behavioral therapy, where you're kind of just considering other options and testing the reality of the situation. But I can't begin to tell you how many times people have had such an aha moment when we go through some of the exercises related to the concept of team, thoughts, emotions, actions, manifestations, where they realize that, you know, the story I had made up in my head about Susie or Johnny or a situation may not actually be the case. It can be life-changing for some in the interactions that they have with their teammates on a regular basis.
Oh, that is absolutely incredible how you can think about that. And so you're able to help people change the way they think through your teams. We're going to get to talking about your team concept in a little bit. I meet people all the time who they just want to talk about negative things. They like to watch negative things on the news. They like to watch Dateline. They like to watch, it's funny here in Los Angeles, you're in Phoenix. I suspect it's probably not that much different than a big city. I call the nightly news at 11 o'clock murder, death, kill, because the first 15 minutes are all about the murders and the yeah. crimes. In fact, it's funny. I work for I do charity work for the first team. The first T charity, which is a wonderful golf charity that teaches kids life skills. And I told the organizers the first day I worked with them, you know, if they put all this education for kids in the schools, the 11 o'clock news would be out of business, because we'd have a lot better citizens. But we got a lot of negative people here, right? Why do people have negative thoughts, and how do they become negative?
So you bring up a really interesting point and I'll answer your question by going to the opposite direction.
Okay.
So oftentimes when I'm speaking to groups or giving a keynote, I'll say to people, okay, by a show of hands, how many of you believe that if you won $500 million in the lottery tomorrow, you would be happy? And then I usually joke and I go, I'm voting too. And by the way, I'm putting my hand up. You know, just to make people feel okay to put their hand up. And I go, and the answer, based on research and a concept of hedonic adaptation, is profoundly yes. You will be very happy when you win $500 million in the lottery for a short period of time. And then you will go back to your baseline, whatever your baseline of happiness is for you. There's a lot of environmental factors that go into, taking out diagnosed psychological disorders like depression and so forth. So let's just put those to the side for a minute. A lot of our ways of thinking has a lot to do with the environment, the people that we surround ourselves with, how we were raised, the thought processes of our parents or whoever happened to raise us. And so everyone gets used to a certain level of baseline of happiness that works for them, however you want to define works for them. The good news is, wherever your baseline is, that is movable. It's a concept called neuroplasticity. The opposite concept of that is you cannot teach an old dog new tricks. Turns out you can teach an old dog new tricks by reinforcing behaviors or thought patterns, if you will, of positivity or curiosity, not toxic positivity, which I'm sure we'll talk about, but just consideration of alternative answers, like we're talking about curiosity. Over time, you start to create a habit of, gee, I wonder why that person cut me off versus they cut me off because they're a jerk. So a lot of it is habitual, but we can also unlearn those habits through time.
So you have seen people who were, my apologies to anybody named Debbie on this call here. Debbie Downer, you have seen Debbie Downers change into Debbie positive people?
100%. In fact, I have a client. So I'm certified in emotional intelligence assessments. Emotional intelligence is a term that talks about how you effectively interpret and express your emotions within how you actually function within the thing called life. So,
right.
You know, how you feel about yourself, how you express yourself outwardly, how you deal with stress, how flexible you are, you know, what are the quality of your relationships, all that kind of stuff. And one gentleman that I worked with over the period of 18 months, he actually gained 24 points in emotional intelligence toward the positive direction. And to put this into perspective, the middle range between low and high, which, by the way, isn't good or bad. I want you to think of it like fitness of a muscle. Your muscle's always there. It's just how fit is the muscle? To put this into perspective, the middle range is only 20 points wide. So he gained 24 points. So, and it had everything to do with a concept called reframing. Like you come upon a given situation and you think, you know, XYZ, well, what's another way we could possibly look at this to reframe the situation, to consider other opportunities of different thought, other possible conclusions, other possible assumptions based on a limited amount of information? So the answer is yes, you can change over time.
So going back to the example you gave earlier, someone cuts you off on the freeway, and instead of just saying that person is a jerk, you step back and say, well, maybe they're not a jerk. Maybe they didn't look for a split second, and maybe there's another reason for that. That's what you're talking about here, right?
Exactly. I mean, have you ever seen those memes on the interwebs where it says, you know, this is a person's life. It's like this big circle. And then there's a little dot in the middle where it says, this is how much you know of that person's life. You have no idea what's going on with them.
So do people understand, Dr. Mendelsohn, that they have a negative attitude? I mean, do they need to have, like I had my aha moment with my A1C. Do people need to realize maybe they have a situation that they have a negative attitude and then, oh my goodness, I'm a negative person. How do people realize that they're negative? Or do they just go along and don't realize it?
Well, I think I'll repeat what I said earlier, which is people do the best they can with the skills they have at the time. And there are some people that realize it. There are some people that don't realize it. And, you know, we all create, this is something that my coaching program told me that really made a big impact with me, which is, you know, we're all exactly where we need to be at this point. And our patterns of behavior that have gotten us to this point have served us to some degree. The question then becomes, are they still serving us? Right? Okay. And that for some people they will never get there, that it's no longer serving them. Whereas for other people, when they begin to question why things are happening in a certain way, why do they feel the quality of their relationships isn't where they would like it to be? Why do they feel, again, barring diagnosed psychological disorders, why can I not get out of this ruminating negative thought pattern? There has to be a certain level of awareness to be able to take that first step toward a different tomorrow.
Okay. So when my dentists who are listening to this podcast are interviewing potential team members, and we all understand that the number one challenge in dentistry today, I've always said there's two. One is the relationship that dental offices have with insurance companies, which we're not getting into today. But the other is hiring and retaining team members. How does a dentist be able to recognize someone that they're interviewing is a negative person or is a positive person? How do you, if I'm talking to somebody for the first time, how do I know? What are the signs?
I would say that a lot of it, I would recommend the individual doctor go off of their own personal experience related to other individuals that they have worked with that were their determination positive or less than positive. And so, there could be certain questions relative to, situationally aware questions like, if this were to happen, what would be your interpretation of that situation? Or what might be some of your first thoughts? And it could be very unique to that individual practice, depending on where they are, what kind of dentistry they focus on, what kind of community they're within. So to some degree, those questions would be specific, but they would be relative to experiences that a doctor has had in the past that they viewed as something that the outcome was positive versus the outcome being negative. Because everything always starts between our ears. Everything starts with a thought. And we will never have an action before we have a thought. So really talking and asking relative questions about thought processes would be the way that I would start. Frankly, that's a very difficult question to answer because the question has a lot of subjectivity to it. However, there is an assessment that's called the Drake assessment that enables employers, both with incumbent team members as well as team members that they would look to hire, to see how they are in the relative scale of positivity, mindset, and thought processes. And you can actually compare one individual's profile. So let's say you have a team member that's positive, is a good worker, has a good head on their shoulders, is looking to see the positive. You can actually compare those scores, those statistically calculated scores, relative to an incoming employee to see how they compare, to see if they would end up being a similar type of individual to the one that you're interviewing.
How does the Drake analysis compare to like a DISC analysis that I've heard a lot about?
So I can't say specifically. The DISC, this is Martin Mendelsohn's personal bias. Martin Mendelsohn's personal bias is against DISC. Because DISC tends to say, you are this, and it labels you.
Right.
And I'm not one to believe that we don't change over time. And so I'm not a big fan of DISC. The Drake I've come to know about recently through my friends at Bent Erickson that offer this assessment. I'm not currently qualified to give this assessment at this time. They are, but it's something that I'm really intrigued by because again, it kind of pegs certain factors, thought processes, and traits from one individual to another. But those, like emotional intelligence, change over time. Think about it. If you were to think about how you interacted and reacted to the world in your 20s versus now, there's a big difference, right?
Huge.
Why is there a big difference? Yeah, the big difference is called life experience and right. how we've navigated through those experiences. So, people change over time.
So, doctors, I want to tell you that in 40 years of coaching, I have talked to thousands of dentists, both at my conference table in our offices, at conferences where I've lectured, on webinars, you know, everywhere, at conventions. And what I hear is something that it's an interesting to me is that for those of you who tell me I have the best team I've ever had, it seems to translate into better production, better profitability, happier office, happier patients, more referrals. And those that continue to be, I mean, I had one guy who was just every time he'd come into my office, it was, oh, the economy is terrible. Oh my gosh, I can't keep team members. Oh my God, I can't find a hygienist. Oh my God. And I finally said to him one day, I said, doctor, you are just, I mean, you're just, I just don't know if you're looking at the world the right way, because you're not, it's not like everybody in dentistry is like you. So I want you to take a minute, Dr. Mendelsohn, and talk a little bit about what you do in your coaching program, because doctors, and again, I say this at every guest, I give an opportunity to talk about what they do, and all the people I bring on, I get probably two or three emails a week, maybe more, from people say, oh, I would like you to be on my podcast. And I'm just really picky about who's on my podcast, which is why Dr. Mendelsohn is on my podcast. So Dr. Mendelsohn, talk a little bit about your coaching program, what you do for dentists, how you can help them, and then I'll let you give out your contact information.
Sure. So I'll split that up into two primary buckets. One would be individual coaching, and then the other would be working with teams. I will tell you, though, that at its core, at its foundation, it's all about mindset. It's all about how we look at the world. One of my favorite authors is Dr. Viktor Frankl, who wrote Man's Search for Meaning. He's no longer with us on this earthly plane. He was a psychiatrist and a neurologist who happened to have survived the horrors of Auschwitz in the Holocaust. Oof. And he's wrote a book called Man's Search for Meaning, as I said, and one of the famous quotes in there is this: there's a space between stimulus and response. In that space lies our freedom to choose our response, and in our response lies our growth and our freedom. And so each and every darn day, in every moment of every day, we have a choice. And if it's coming from a man who survived the Holocaust, I'm going to listen, because he was on this quest to get people to understand that there's always meaning in life. There's always hope in the darkness. And so my primary focus with my coaching clients is their view of the world, getting them to understand my team framework, that our thoughts drive emotions, that drive actions, that manifest results. And there's no judgment zone in my coaching, but there is a challenging zone where I challenge how they're thinking about certain elements of their life, whether it's personal life, relationships, their team, et cetera. And I've had great success with clients individually, help them look at the world differently. It just, one of my clients comes to mind, by the way, extraordinary clinician, I know this by reputation, was a single practitioner doing well over $2 million a year, whom every time a patient said no to a proposed treatment plan, this individual took it very personally. And this was one of the things that we worked through, because on the surface, you would say to yourself, well, wait a minute, you got this incredibly successful practice. You obviously have high case acceptance, or you wouldn't have the numbers. Why are we taking things so personally each and every time this happens? So mindset, reframing tools, the ability to make decisions, because when we're in a different, non, shall we say, positive place, it can be very difficult to make decisions based on data, because maybe we don't trust the data, or it doesn't feel right despite facts. So that's kind of how I focus with my individual clients. With the teams, the mindset element of my work manifests itself in the creation of an alliance that is a document that we hang on the wall that becomes a cornerstone and a foundation to every single thing we do. And so this foundation is comprised of three primary questions. What kind of place do we want to show up to every day? How are we going to show up with each other when there are challenges? And how are we going to keep each other accountable when and if we feel the alliance is being violated? And I can tell you, that one piece of paper that takes 60 to 90 minutes at least in person to facilitate the creation of can change the face of a practice, because it creates, in the words of Amy Edmondson as a researcher, psychological safety. The feeling that people can bring things that are challenging up without fear of reprisal or judgment.
Retribution,
and it can cause it can cause this open environment of communication where we can go through any problem and come out the other side still as a team. I think one of my first team clients, practice clients, I guess, I ever worked with, I love what he said. He said, the challenges are still there. We just know how to handle them differently now, which I think is really, really cool.
But this, and I want to get to giving out your contact information, but while we're talking about this, so you've got to, in order for to create a team alliance, you've got to have everybody's got to be on the same page. And if you have one person in your team that just will not buy into this, what do you tell your client?
Yeah. So that's the beauty of this, because what we do is, you know, we work ahead of time before I get there. And then I work with the team in person, and then we follow up not only just with the doctor, but also with the team via Zoom and so forth. And the truth of the matter is that what ends up happening is they get drowned out, because the rest of the team sees the opportunity, sees the beauty, sees the new world order, if you will. And the prior behaviors that were accepted before no longer become accepted. And I can tell you, there's been quite a number of situations where after we worked together, individuals self-selected out and found somewhere else to be successful.
I was just going to say that.
And the doctor was completely happy with that.
I was going to say, that person finally realizes that they're the odd person out.
Yeah.
And they leave, is what you're saying. So, so doctors, if you have a team that is just not performing, they're not getting along, they're not seeing what your vision is, all these things, you might consider giving Dr. Mendelsohn a call. He's got a fantastic website. So, Dr. Mendelsohn, if someone is interested in working with you or learning more about your work, which is fascinating, what would be the best way to get a hold of you?
Just drop me an email, frankly. It's very simple. It's just martin@martinmendelsohn.com. My website is also my name, martinmendelsohn.com. Or look me up on LinkedIn and drop me a direct message either way.
And it's spelled M-E-N-D-E-L-S-O-N. Okay. So you talked about we've talked about negative. Let's talk about making people happy. What is a happiness study and how do you use it in your work?
So the happiness certification that I have been bestowed upon with or studied to achieve, whatever words you want to use, was a year-long course of study that actually today has become an accredited master's program. I can't say that I have the master's, but it's been pivoted to a master's program. And it was started by a man by the name of Dr. Tal Ben-Shahar. Dr. Shahar gained notoriety when the Boston Globe did an article on him quite a number of years ago now, wondering why this Harvard professor was giving a course on the science of happiness, and these Harvard students were lined up, standing room only, to get into this course. And the idea of the article was, why aren't they happy there at Harvard? And so he has since left Harvard, has started the Happiness Studies Academy, and is on a mission to, in effect, train others like me to become disciples on the true science of happiness. Because happiness is not one thing. Happiness is not walking around with a smile on your face all the time you know, you see those stickers and those patches of good vibes only. Yeah, that's not happiness. That's toxic positivity. Because happiness is a comparative emotion. Happiness can only be felt if you've experienced sadness at some other point in your life.
Interesting.
And so happiness as a concept is the idea of whole being, whole. And it's comprised of five elements that is represented by an acronym of the word SPIRE. So the S stands for spiritual whole being. Now, is this connected to a deity or organized religion? No, not necessarily, although it could be. This is all about finding meaning and purpose in your life, spiritual whole being. The P of SPIRE stands for physical whole being, treating your body as a vessel, specifically around nutrition, rest, and exercise, you know, filling your body up as a cup, so to speak. The I of SPIRE is about intellectual whole being. This is where this whole idea of living a life of curiosity comes from. Is it about lifelong learning? Sure. But it's more about living a life of curiosity, because think about it. Think about the emotion. We'll go back to the same example. Think about the emotion of getting cut off in your car and saying, that jerk, versus, oh, I wonder if he didn't see me. Think about how much more peace it brings to your life, right?
Oh, big, big difference, so, because you're mad.
Yeah.
You're angry.
Exactly.
And that exactly. probably and carries over for many minutes or hours, and you think about it
yes.
all the time.
Yes. Yes. Often I say to my clients, did you have a bad day, or did you have 5 minutes to turn into 24 hours? Because the truth of the matter is, when we think about our lives and we think about the future, for example, the positive potential outcome is just as valid as the negative, the positive is just as valuable as the negative. Why? Because neither's happened yet. And so we can get into the research. You heard me very quickly in the spotlight on speaking, talk about the research, but the research is very clear. When you focus on negativity, it affects your brain. It affects your ability to have cognitive thought. It affects your visual cortex. It affects your cognitive reasoning. It is an avalanche of effects that affect your interaction with the world.
So do you, so, when you go, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead. I apologize.
Yeah, I just wanted to finish up with the acronym. So we talked about I being intellectual whole being. R is about relational whole being. In other words, having good quality relationships with the people around you. Maybe some of your listeners have heard of the Grant study before. It was the longest study ever conducted in Harvard history. 73 years long, believe it or not. They followed 263 undergraduate men, and then later on they added women as well, for 73 years, and they measured everything, status, net worth, IQ, position in society. And the number one finding of this study was that the warmth of human relationships drove the greatest level of life satisfaction. And that's a quote.
You know,
relationships matter.
I've been of the opinion, one of my guests I had about a year ago talks about retirement and the non-financial aspects. It's about having 2 a.m. friends. I'm sure you probably know
yes,
what that is.
Yes.
Is having someone. I have my best male friend in the whole world. I'll mention his name because I don't know if he'll ever listen to my podcast. I ask him to, but he may not. His name is Mitchell. There are days that I want to put his head through a plate glass window, but I will tell you that he would do anything for anyone. He walked out of two of my April 15th lunches with 15 people, my team and their spouses and all this stuff, paid the bill and didn't tell me he paid the bill till days later, just because that's what he does. And he would do anything for anybody. That's what we're talking about here, right? That type of person?
Yeah, 100%. I just want to finish the last letter of SPIRE, because it might be one of the most important ones relative to people's embracing of this concept, which is emotional whole being. An emotional whole being is allowing your emotions to flow through and flow past you. It is all about accepting that the crappy thing that just happened is really crappy. But the difference is acknowledging that it's crappy, getting mad that it was crappy, navigating through the feelings of crappiness so that you can come out the other side being grateful for having survived that crappiness. It's incredibly important because true happiness is not toxic positivity. It is not walking around with a smile on your face all the time. It's actually the antithesis of that.
It takes some work to be happy, it sounds like.
It does. And I will tell you, it's worth every damn minute of it.
I'll bet.
This year alone, I've had some really challenging things happen personally and professionally. And I can tell you in all candor, the way that I rallied out of those situations in terms of depth and time was light years ahead of how it would have affected me 5 or 10 years ago. And without reservation, I can say that.
100%. So how does one get a hold of a happiness study? Do we have to hire Dr. Martin Mendelsohn to do it? Is it something I can find on the internet? What did you say? You're a certified happiness.
I have a certification in happiness studies. I believe the best place to start is the book that started everything for me. It's called The Happiness Advantage. It's by Shawna Kaur, A-C-H-O-R. In fact, if you just go to my website, I have a whole tab on books I love.
Yeah, you did. I saw that. You've got about 15 of them. They look great. Yeah.
I know. And so you could just click into it there. But not only is this book funny, not only is this book entertaining, but believe it or not, it's the only book of its type that I've ever read. This is what I've ever read. There may be others out there that have more scientific references in numbers than pages. And it's a fun read.
Okay. Yeah. And one more time for our listeners, what is the name of that? We'll make sure we put in the show notes. What's the name of the book?
It's called The Happiness Advantage.
I'm writing this down because I'm going on a vacation and not that
you're
going
to love it.
I turned 65 on August 14th. My son, Forrest, turns 30. We're recording on July 22nd. I think today's the 22nd. So he turns 30 on the on Sunday. So we're going to be gone, and I'll be on a cruise ship. I used to be one of these people, Dr. Mendelsohn. I'd go on a cruise ship, and it would drive my wife of almost 40 years crazy. And every single minute, I had to have accounted for. Okay, it's 3:30. Now, I got to make sure I'm doing something at 4 o'clock. Now I get there. And if John Grisham hasn't written a new book, I need something else. So I have to go get that one. So we as professionals, Dr. Mendelsohn, we're juggling meetings, emails, deadlines, technology, networking, problem solving, troubleshooting, multitasking, analytics. I can keep going and going and going. And women who practice owners juggle all this on the top of being what might be the most important job that they have, which is being a mom. So give us some tips. Give my listeners some tips on how to handle all the challenges in life that we all have to deal with that come at us at 150 miles an hour every day.
Boy, that's a loaded question.
Well, I ask the important loaded questions.
Yeah. So, I've asked myself this question too. My answer to this is something that I'm really proud of that I'm coming out with in the next month and a half. And so I was noticing this myself, that why are some individuals more adept at handling the overwhelm than other individuals? And look, everybody has the same 24 hours in the day. And in the most recent years, now that I've been, on my own, running my own business and interacting with people as clients, why are some people able to answer an email and other people, you have to email them 6 times and hope and pray that they'll actually even respond? So I've actually developed a course that I'm calling Leadership Mastery from Overwhelm to Optimal Performance. And it's frankly a hierarchy, because it's got to be a hierarchy. And I practice what I preach. Guess what lesson number one is? Lesson number one is mindset mastery, setting the stage for success, to get people to understand that how you think about the world will then actually help either cause you to navigate effectively or not your trip and journey through this world. So the next step is we've got to take a step back and gain clarity and control. And we've got to actually do a literal task and time audit. And you might say, well, Martin, that sounds like it's a lot of work. Well, if you're at that point, like you talked about earlier, everybody reaches that point. If you're at that point where you're like, I can't do this anymore. I'm overwhelmed. I can't leave my office at the office. It's on my mind all the time. Then maybe this is for you, because I guide people through how to go from 80,000 feet to 50,000 feet to 8 feet to actually look at what's on their plate to gain clarity and control. And I do so by using the Eisenhower Matrix, which was developed by Dwight D. Eisenhower, which is a way to categorize everything in your life based upon urgency and importance. And it puts it into four quadrants. One of the quadrants, which is critically important, is delegation. And so I help guide people to understand what it is they should actually delegate. And then we go into the art and science of delegation because, you know, at the end of the day, delegation is communication. And I don't know how many times you've heard this from other people, maybe even yourself, where you try to delegate something to somebody and you're like, why didn't they do it the way I told them to? I told them they had to do it this way. Did you ever hear that before?
Absolutely. No, never. Of course.
Yeah. So actually, ironically enough, how we set up the delegation, the communication element of the delegation at the very beginning with psychological safety, actually is the most important step there is. Because delegation at its heart is as much about the delegatee doing the task correctly as it is the delegator communicating what it is they need delegated.
You know, I think different people are wired differently. I'm one of these people that's of the opinion that I like to think that I was a good father. I cared about my kids. I spent time with them. But I'll tell you, I think 70 to 80% of what people turn into is in their DNA, and there's not much you can do about it. You may disagree with that. I'd love to hear your opinion about it. But I'm one of these people, Dr. Mendelsohn. I can multitask with the best of them. And I don't get flustered when I have 10 things on my plate because I just prioritize them and get them done. But I mean, are people wired, some people that they can't get one thing done and it takes them 2 days while other people can multitask and get everything done? What do you think about that?
I think that the answer is yes. I think that everybody is different. I think that everybody functions at the level in which they are comfortable. But I also firmly believe that barring things like diagnosed ADHD, of course, the way you actually deal with your workday is a learned behavior. So my goal is to help those that want to learn and can learn a different way, because everything that I teach within this leadership course is stuff that I had to deal with myself, then deployed with hundreds, if not thousands, of coaching clients to then see the results of getting them to think differently, getting them to take an audit of everything they have, get them to delegate effectively, and then actually get them and give them frameworks and understandings of how to navigate through your day more effectively. So I don't, you know, when you look at somebody and they have literally 10,372 emails in their inbox, that may not be an effective way to work. So How can we actually manage our inbox in a different way so that we have a handle on things, so that things don't overwhelm us and we get just driven over like a Mack truck by the largesse of the things that are hitting at us on a regular basis? There is another way. We don't have to live that way.
Some tips on managing time, because time is something that just gets away from everybody. Do you have two or three top tips of things people can do that maybe make a change just by listening to what you're saying? Or is it another book?
It's both, actually. So one of the books that I love that really got me started in this is called Getting Things Done by David Allen.
Okay.
And a lot of the stuff in my course is based on some of his philosophy. But I'll give you a couple of tips. The first is if you're not using an electronic form of note and information capture, you need to. There's various ones out there. There's OneNote by Microsoft. There's Evernote that a lot of Mac users use. And what makes those products so invaluable is their search capability. And so if you're the kind of person that is saving an email because it's got some kind of information in it, maybe a website, maybe a book name, that kind of thing, these electronic capture apps are for you. Because what you can do is you can actually go in and you know, let's say it's a book you want to read, as an example. You could go into your note that says books I want to read, and all of a sudden, guess what's there? The Happiness Advantage is there, Getting Things Done is there, and you don't have to remember it, and it doesn't sit in your inbox. And the list goes on and on.
So it's an organizational tool. It's an organizational tool.
It can change your life. Okay? The other thing that I will tell you that can change your life in managing email, how many times have you emailed somebody and then a month later you're like, shoot, did I ever hear back from them?
Right.
So,
oh, my God, yes.
Okay. So let me give you a tip that could change your life.
I'm writing.
You can create
or maybe I should get out my OneNote and put it down through my OneNote and not just write it down on a pad of paper, right?
Yeah. You can create a folder called follow-up.
Yeah.
And you can get in the habit when you send somebody an email that you need to hear back from or would like to hear back from, you BCC yourself. Okay?
Okay.
You send the email. And then you drag and drop that email into your follow-up folder. You then go to said follow-up folder in whatever cadence you need to based upon your life. Every day, every week, every month. It depends who you are and what you do. But that one tip alone has caused person after person after person to say to me, thank you for following up. Thank you for not dropping the ball. Wow, I can't believe you remembered that. It's a simple matter of organization.
And doctors, your patients will appreciate that you follow up with them because they have very, very, very busy lives.
And for those practicing docs, if you're sending a lot of emails to your team and you want to make sure that you can use the same methodology. And so David Allen would tell you your inbox should be completely empty. As organized as I am, I've never gotten there except for here and there. Right? It is what it is. But you can set up all kinds of folders. Your waiting folder, you can set up folders with each member of your team to keep information at your fingertips. You can file that in your electronic system. There's lots of different ways to do it, but just leaving it in your email imparts a lot of inefficiency and disorganization.
I've seen people's computers where there's 25,000 unread emails.
Yeah.
So I get it.
100%.
Now, you are launching, as I understand it, a self-leadership video series this fall.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about that, and then we're going to, as much as I'd love to talk to you for another 3 hours, because this stuff is fascinating to me, we're going to need to kind of wrap up the podcast. So talk about that, and I want you to give out your contact information one more time.
Yeah, so I'm really excited about it, because it's really a culmination of the last decade plus, and it talks about a lot of the stuff that we've talked about. It's in five parts and it's a hierarchy. One thing builds on the next, and it's called Leadership Mastery from Overwhelm to Optimal Performance. And so we start with, you know, getting real with ourselves about how we're interacting with the world and our mindset about our world. I then give you in lesson two, the ability to actually do a time and task audit to the best of your ability, really ascertain how much time you have available and what's on your plate. And then I actually give you sheets where not only can you account for that, you can actually categorize it with the Eisenhower matrix to understand, is this something I need to do urgently? Is this something I need to put on my calendar and then not worry about it? Is this something I need to delegate? Or is this something I need to eliminate out of my life? I then teach you how to delegate in the next lesson. And then we get into the philosophies of David Allen, like we were talking about here with the email and the electronic note taking and all that kind of stuff. But it's all based on having looked at what's on your plate, how much time you have in your life, and how you're going to actually get through each and every day. And then last but not least, there's a module on expert communication, navigating difficult conversations. Those conversations where opinions vary and emotions are running high. It's literally the number one thing people contact me for on a regular basis. They say, how would you say this? I want to say this like you do. And that's actually based on a lot of the teachings from another book called Crucial Conversation. So what I'm actually doing is I'm launching this series as a standalone self-paced experience mid-September. But then what I'm doing late 2024 into early 2025, I'm going to actually be launching small group coaching cohorts of 6 people maximum, where we will meet twice a month for 6 months, utilizing this teaching as a backbone to help you become a better leader and manage that overwhelm so that you can perform optimally. And when you leave your office at the end of the day, not feel like you're still overwhelmed. Because look, here's a reality that that I would invite people to embrace. You will always have something else to do until you're no longer on our earthly plane.
Yeah.
So you have a choice. Yeah. So you have a choice. Either be frustrated by that every day or take some time to create some systems so that when you leave your office on any given day, it's not that you don't have a lot of work to do, but all your work is accounted for. And that is a huge stress reliever.
And I'm an accountant, so that makes me excited. But I want to put a bow on this with what I think is a really good question. What you're talking about is fantastic. I mean, changing people from a negative attitude to a positive attitude, getting people more organized, getting people to get more things done, getting people to be happier. But it takes work. Now, I would think that human beings are generally set in their ways. What does someone need to, they've got to have a mindset that they want to change the way they are, because it takes work to do this. This is not just something you read the book and, wow, it's done. Or Dr. Mendelsohn comes in for an hour and, yeah, I've got this now. So, I mean, for anybody who's listening to this podcast, Dr. Mendelsohn, you're a gift to the dental profession. I'm not being sarcastic in any way, shape, or form. This is really good stuff. What would you suggest? Someone is just like, you know, I'm listening to this and gosh, I am that negative person and I am imparting negative thoughts on my team. Where should somebody what do you do other than pick up the phone and call you? I mean, what can they do? What's the first step to move forward on something like this? They've got to have that aha moment, mindset change. What do you think?
Yeah, I would say to you that if someone's already thinking that, they've already taken the first step. And honestly, the first step is typically the hardest one to take. And so if you're in that place where you're like, you know, what do I need to do about it? Where do I go, et cetera? Not to be a broken record, but I would actually start with the happiness advantage. I would read Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. There's a book by Michael Singer called The Untethered Soul that was also life-changing for me, where Mr. Singer, who by the way is a billionaire businessman, not some person on a mountaintop. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but you get the idea. States something to the effect of you're not the voice in your head, you're the one who hears it. And that all of these thoughts that go through our brain over and over and over again, thousands, tens of thousands of times a day, is you're lying to yourself. And we all have these negative thoughts. So what I would say to you is, if that individual's having that thought, they've already taken the most important step, which is awareness. I think the second thing would start to just, you know, casually become more educated on this area with the books that we talked about. I will tell you that part of my coaching program, which I took very much to heart, is that there's a huge difference between coaching and therapy. And if there are things in your life that you can't seem to get over and get past, previous experiences, with even situations of abuse, how you view yourself when you look in the mirror, all those kind of things. There's a place for therapy and there's a place for coaching. And so if you're really feeling like you don't know where to go, therapy is a wonderful modality that I would recommend to anybody. So
I have told my audience, Dr. Mendelsohn, I don't know if I shared this with you, but about 8 or 9 years ago, there was something just not feeling right in my business and my life. And I went to one of my two or three 2 a.m. friends who is a clinical psychologist, and he was not the right person to help me because we were just too close of friends, and he referred me to somebody. And I went to a therapist. And folks, let me tell you something. You don't have to have mental illness problems to go to a therapist. It was the best thing I ever did. She taught me the difference between fear and faith. She taught me that I didn't always have to be the one with the right. I mean, we could spend hours talking about this. Anyway, I think that what you've heard today, folks, is, again, my podcast is nothing more than a call to action. So, Dr. Mendelsohn, your email is martin@martinmendelsohn, MENDELSON.com, correct?
Yes, sir. Yes. Okay.
And your website is just Google your name, Martin Mendelsohn, and you can find out. He's got a great website, all the places he's speaking. You speak not only, mostly to dental groups, but to other groups also. And what you have applies to lots of organizations. I cannot thank you enough for what you have shared with my audience today. I can't thank you enough for the 8 minutes that I got to listen to you. I was joking with my audience. I might have even mentioned on another podcast as I think. What number were you in the group of 1 to 8? Were you?
I don't think I know. I was 4 because that's the date of my birth, and I was less lucky.
Well, I was number 6, and I swear to God, as I was listening to you, I started to pull up my Southwest app and said, oh my God, these guys, including this Mendelsohn guy, is so good. I better see if I can get a flight out earlier so I don't have to go through and do this 8 minutes. But it was fun. And I know that we all had a lot of fun doing this and a lot of camaraderie. So, Dr. Mendelsohn, if you will hang with me while I take the podcast out, I would appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time and expertise. And folks, I would encourage you, if you have any of the issues going on in your life or with your dental team or in your practice that Dr. Mendelsohn was talking about today, I would encourage you to take a look at his website, maybe reach out to him. I'm sure that he can help you. Who else can also help you is Decisions in Dentistry Magazine, www.decisionsindentistry.com, 140 continuing education courses for a great price. Go to the website, www.decisionsindentistry.com. You can also get my video and audio, lecture series on retirement planning, financial planning, metrics. We talk about all those things at the same place. If you are not happy with your CPA relationship, please give me a call, 657-279-3243, or email me at awiederman, W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N, @idebailey.com. I'm a member of the Academy of Dental CPAs, 25 CPA firms that represent over 11,000 dentists in the United States, www.adcpa.org. And again, if you are not looking at where you are financially, what your financial plan looks like, I'm so excited about working with Ide Bailey Wealth. Again, give me a call, 657-279-3243 or awiederman@idebailey.com, and we can get you started on a path to financial freedom and security. That sounds like a political announcement. But anyway, with that, again, Dr. Mendelsohn, thank you so much for your time today and for your amazing expertise and the books. I now have my reading for my cruise. And with that, that will do it today for The Art of Dental Finance and Management, this episode with Art Wiederman, CPA. And we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of The Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you never miss an episode. The Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast is produced by Ide Bailey in partnership with Art Wiederman, CPA, Decisions in Dentistry Magazine, and the Academy of Dental CPAs. For audience questions and feedback, email Art Wiederman, awiederman@idebailey.com. That's AWIEDERMAN at EIDEBAILLY.com. Or you may call Art at 657-279-3243.